Welcome to Conscious Communication, the podcast that can help you improve your company's culture and better your team's communication, helping you build more significant relationships. Now here's your host, Philip Bogolub.
I have the privilege and honor of talking with both Giovanni. I just already screwed it up. Already started.
That's all right. And we're going to keep going.
That's all right.
Whatever you want, Philip.
And Nick Gallo. Did I say Gallo right, or is it Gallo?
You can say Gallo, but you can say Gallo.
See, potato, I could say potato. Okay.
Yeah.
It's like Bogolub, my last name. How do you spell it? Buy one, get one, L-U-B. Whatever you want to say. It doesn't
matter.
So I'm talking to the brothers of a company called Ethico, which I want to ask later. Where did you get that from? I have an idea, but I want to see how you came up with that. Giovanni has been involved with startups, growth initiatives, healthcare, which is close to my heart. I come from the medical field. And my old background as an engineer with X-ray tubes. And he has a bachelor's in finance and accounting and an MBA at Kellogg. Nick is a servant and co-CEO. They're both co-CEOs. And I want you to go over what you're telling me about earlier before I hit the record button about servant. He's a certified public accountant. My wife would love you because she's an actuary. And when we were dating, I said, that's nice. What's an actuary? Anyway, he has been impacting compliance and culture for many years. And he's a student of behavioral economics and organizational psychology. Boy, the mouth is not working here. And I like that. So it's two things. I want to thank you both for taking the time to be on the show.
Glad to be here.
Yeah.
Really love what you're doing, Philip, and really excited to be part of the community and speaking to your audience today.
Thank you very much. The first question I'm going to ask you is, what was your aha moment? What was your serendipity or coincidence that got you into where you're at now? You just didn't wake up one morning going, I think I'm going to do a company called Ethico and I'm going to do HR and compliance. Where did you guys where did that happen? What light came on?
Well, it's kind of serendipity that you just said the word serendipity, because that's our word of the year this year. It seems like so much happens due to serendipity and these little things that seem like mistakes or they seem like happenstance, and they end up blossoming into these amazing things. Gio and I are first-generation Americans, and we grew up in our parents' business and just had a dream of running a company together since we were young guys. And we set out on to answer your question, like the aha moment was the impact that we saw that we were able to have in our parents' business at such a young age, where we saw that you could make little changes to things and they have this sort of transformative effect on the lives of the people in the business and on the bottom line of the company and the quality of our family's life. And I think we had an aha moment in our teens that, you know, business could really be a force of good in the world if it's done right and people are put ahead of profits, I guess.
Yeah. What did you call your brother? Gio?
Yeah, you can call me Gio. That's a little easier.
Anything to add to that?
Oh, I got a lot. But yeah, I think, you know, that was certainly a big one, us kind of realizing that we wanted to go on this path and that, you know, leading a business can have as much meaning, it can have as much spirit and purpose as some of these things that are maybe more commonly thought of as heroic or, you know, purposeful jobs of, you know, I want to be a firefighter or I want to, you know, go, you know, dig wells in Africa. Those are great things. But, you know, I think that seeing how our parents ran their business. And really, you know, there was maybe, I don't know what the antithesis of an aha moment was, but also just seeing that so many companies that, you know, get a lot of esteem because they're on the Fortune 100 list or they have this really famous CEO really have a really messy way of treating and taking care of their people. I think those are two things that catalyzed us to say, hey, we not only want to be leaders of a business, but we see this as our calling in life and as a way. You know, I think there's more than one way that any of us finds purpose, but a big way that we can apply our God-given gifts in order to make a positive difference in the world and improve people's lives.
Well, and that goes back to something where I always say empowering people empowers ourselves. Mm-hmm. And when you empower others, I don't learn from listening to myself. I learn from listening to other people. And sure. I don't believe in coincidence. I don't believe in serendipity. I believe everything is meant to be. If you're in the right frame of mind, and we talked about this earlier, well, with email and everything about Ajinoy, and it's transformed my life. And it's changed things in a way that I've noticed coming from the subconscious mind, the universal mind. Now, I call it God. Some people call it Krishna. Some people call it Atman. Some people can call it the Force. It doesn't really matter. It's that universal mind. It's that the angels, the spirits, and you pray and you meditate. I do it 3 times a day. I do it in the morning. I do it in the afternoon. I do it in the evening. And it's really important to be in that world, because once you enter that subconscious mind of the universal mind of God, you then open up these doors and opportunities that you didn't know existed. These places that you could go in your mind that doesn't conform to what the outside world telling you is supposed to be. Just like you're saying, you got the Fortune 100 companies, you got the big CEOs. We're not knocking anybody with that, but there's a purpose. Do unto others. I want people to be treated the same way I want to be treated. I want to give people opportunities to be able to show up to their jobs, do what they want, make sure they're there for a reason. I don't want you to occupy space. I want you to occupy something of meaning. If you're there, do something. If you need help, you know, ask the bosses, ask the managers, that's what they're there for. But otherwise, just kind of say, hey, is everything okay? Empowering them, giving them positivity. And that's something—
And get out of the way.
I'm sorry?
And then get out of the way.
Yes.
So many people spend their life blocking other people's energy. Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh my God. And well, I call them energy suckers.
Yeah, block it or suck it, you know, do something bad to it.
It's terrible. And you know, and being in HR and compliance, you know, everybody's got the wrong idea of that. You know, I always thought HR, they call you, you're fired. Compliance, I wasn't necessarily directly involved, but with radiation and stuff, I had to be involved with it. But where'd you start realizing what you've done, and correct me if I'm wrong, you've put people back into a people business. It's human resources. It's not inhuman resources. It's not unassociated, detached human resources. It's the word human. And you're a resource as a human. And compliance, you're just compliant. Compliance is different. You have to follow rules. I understand that. But you have to put human back in human. And what's really changed, because, you know, the B2B stuff, and I don't have a problem with that. But what is missing in there is the human part. I say philosophy to business and business to philosophy. It's that individual that's coming into people's lives that, you know, like interviewing people. I hated interviews, and I had to interview people. I'm sure you've interviewed hundreds of people. And I always wanted to start applying, and I started doing it. I was like, what are you here for? Why are you here? I don't want to hear about all your qualifications. You could have filled in everything just to fill in whatever that information was that we were looking for. You know,
yeah, a computer could do that.
Yeah, exactly. Tell me why you're here. Are you here to fill a position? Tell me about something that, why do you want to even do this? And then you leave it open to them to tell you. I mean, when I had to go on something that was broken in the medical field on a CAT scan or some piece of medical equipment, it was a big deal. I didn't come in there a bull in a china shop. I sat down, let's get a cup of coffee, find out what's going on. I didn't fix it. They already knew how to fix it. Their inner knowing knows. Everybody knows what's true. They're truly here for on planet Earth. You just got to get in touch with that.
Yeah, their knower already knows. And, you know, I would even say that in the human resources thing, how about you not treat people as resources?
Right. How about you be a resource for the people?
Yeah.
How about you be a resource for the humans?
Yes. I like that. It should be, well, it's, I was talking to somebody a few days ago, and they said it didn't used to be called human resources. I forgot the term she said it we used to be called.
Human capital.
Resource title is not that old, but you're right. Reverse it. Say resources for humans.
And let's stop strip mining our human resources, and why don't we engage and empower the human beings who are part of our organization to fulfill, discover, and live out their purpose in their world. They're not just in our world. We're all coming to the same place to try to fulfill a similar mission together. And for the parts of our days that those overlap, that we can be working on the same project together, the same team, let's create this as not just an organization, but an organism of a bunch of people tied together, fulfilling a purpose to make the world better.
Nick,
I get to work with this guy.
I was wondering why we were connecting, just to have the audience share a little bit. We were connecting, the three of us, on email and over instant message on LinkedIn. And it was this big connection. And then Nick was saying he was going through some of the stuff for the philosophy. And I was like, really? And it hit you. Now I know why. I believe there's more people.
Yeah, Nick is like the stoic of ethics. They're going to put this guy in the pantheon philosophers on organizational development.
It's being able to find people. Right now I have my first two students for the philosophy. And it's been very exciting. It's been going on for about 3 months now. And they're totally different people. And it's interesting to talk about the mind, because the last thing we ever go to is the mind. We don't go. We go to the outside world, put the internet aside. Say the internet didn't exist, because it didn't really exist like this 20 years ago, right? We went to the library. We went to people to tell me what to do. Tell me what to do. Tell me what to do. And then it works for a little bit, because normally what we do is we change habits that changes a few routines. And then we get tired of doing it because those new habits usually don't really work. And we feel more, I say this, we feel more comfortable being uncomfortable in something we're familiar with than being uncomfortable in something we have not have a new folder for. I call it a new written folder, a new experience. So we get stuck. We sit, we're rolling automatic habit machines. We get uncomfortable being comfortable in something that we're familiar with because it's just familiar. And that could be relationships, that could be work, that could be money, that could be success, that could be family. Put whatever words, phrases you want on there. And then we just accept that for what it is. And we just assume that there is no other way. And when this imaging technique started getting created, I was like, you know, and it created this right mindset, you know, I'm not doing it. I'm connected and it's coming through me. And
you're allowing it. You're not doing it. You're allowing it.
Bingo.
You're enabling it.
Yeah.
Channeling it. Yeah.
And that's one of the things, you know, you were talking about it, with the psychology of behavioral economics and, you know, it's interesting when you're dealing with people, people don't like change, which makes no sense to me. And I'll explain why. So the minute you're born, you don't know how to go to the bathroom. You don't know how to eat. You don't know how to drink. You don't know how to crawl. You don't know what on and on.
Yeah, they got to spank you just so you can start breathing.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's all change from the minute you're born to the minute you die. And remember, we come from dirt. We go back to, you know, we come from, we have a round trip ticket. Everybody's got a round trip ticket.
Duck, baby.
You look across the street and go, hey, Jim and Susie's house is gone. They must be dead. You know, they didn't take it with you. You can't take this stuff with you. Right. And nobody's figured out a way, and I don't want to have a way. You've got to do something here on the planet while you're here. And what you guys are doing is you want to make a difference while you're here, every day. See how you can, and it's a good feeling. I want to be able to go to bed at night and wake up in the morning with something that I feel I can be making a difference with. And how do you feel every day when you go to work? I could just answer the question just seeing your faces. And feeling your energy, even though it's through electronics, that, you know, how do you feel coming to work in the morning? How do you feel going home at night?
I feel excited.
How does that excitement, what is that relating to in your mind that you're going to every day? And you just come in and you see people, you're talking to people. How is that excitement relaying to other people that you're being in contact with?
Well, that's hard to answer because I only see the world through my own eyes. I can't see how I come across unless I'm talking to myself in the mirror or on Zoom.
Right. True. What's your intention?
My intention is to create environment, circumstances, clear expectations for the human beings that have decided to cast their lot with us, so to speak, and be part of this company that we're building, you know, create those circumstances that allow them to succeed. I think there's genius in everybody, and it's our job, not, you know, as leaders. Leaders are just anybody who's willing to be an example and willing to, you know, be the change that they want to see in the world. It's our job as leaders to unleash that God-given genius in the people around us, and that's what my intention is, I think.
Yeah, and Gio, same thing?
Yeah, I mean, very similar. You know, I kind of call it being hopeful, and, you know, someone said something really wise one time. This one is not what me quoting myself, but said that happiness is the presence of hope for a better life in the future. And I think that that's part of why, you know, to get back to kind of our aha moment and what brought us into this, I have hope that what we're doing is going to make lives better for the people we work with here on our team. And we can help them have an opportunity and develop their skills and make an impact and, you know, make some money and build their career. And I hope and believe that when we do a good job at that, then the users of our software, the ethics experts who trust us to help them with their job, are going to be better at their job and get more stuff done. And ultimately, you know, one of the biggest areas of impact is that I hope and believe that if we do a good job at this and we help ethics experts do their job better, then millions of employees around the world are going to spend those, it's not just 7 hours, it's not just 8 hours, it's probably 8 to 11 hours if you count all the time that is built around work and your commuting and all of that. All that time every day is going to be a little bit better if we do our job well. And that gives me a lot of hope, and it gives me a lot of energy to show up and to try to not just do it my way, but help the people who we hire and empower and trust to achieve the why that we set out in the how that they put together with their own mind and gifts.
Do you think you can have happiness without hope? I love that quote. That was a Geo original quote, right?
No, it's not, but you can not. Since I'm going to remember who it was, you should just quote me.
I must have used
it. Yeah, yeah, I got that one from you.
And also, like with copyright, if you change like 30% of it, then you can re-copyright it. So I was probably that inaccurate that you could quote me for what I said.
I don't think you can have without hope.
No, it's just like eating the Soma tabs in that book, Brave New World.
Wait, say again?
You ever read A Brave New World, Philip?
No.
Okay, you should read it. One of my favorites. It's a certain type of dystopian novel where people take some medicine to mimic happiness.
Yeah.
And I think if you don't have hope that things are going to change and be better, I don't think you can actually have happiness.
No. And hope is just an option. That you have options, to me. When you're mentioning that, that's the first word that came into my subconscious mind was you have options. And options means you have choices. Because God gave us choice. The subconscious mind gave us the imagination. So when I pray, I ask for help. When I meditate, I get that help. But I have to be open into the psychology and the openness of the imaging technique that I've created for the subconscious mind to be able to get those answers. One of the things I believe is life is a placebo. And you guys know what placebos, of course, are. And
is that thing with that like a baby has in the womb?
No. Okay, so a placebo is a fake pill when they're doing testing.
Oh, yeah, like a sugar pill. Got it.
You got it. And they've had studies of hundreds of studies. One study I remember, they actually had like, I think, 4 or 6 surgeons do surgery on these football players' knees, and half they did it, the other half they just did an incision and sewed it all up, and guess what? All 6 of them recovered. It really is what you tell your mind. And there's all sorts of things that we do out there to think that if we take something internally, of read something that's really good. But the problem is we get up at 3 a.m, we start realizing it didn't solve a problem. It didn't do anything. You can't escape who you are. You can't escape what's going on inside you. When you go on I call them mind vacations, whether it's a beach vacation or you go to a hotel or you go whatever you go, you come back to you. You can't stop getting away from you. And instead of trying to figure out a way to get away from it, you have to figure out a way to be able to get into it and understand it so you can get not rid of it, but work with it. So then that more, the two different minds, the positive mind can take over. The imaging, the way you do it, the conscious mind could just keep you safe and not running into traffic and getting hit by a car with. And if we could do it that way and just realize that subconscious can be in control of your everyday, your joy and your abundance, whatever that is for you, then we will live in such an amazing state, because one of the most important things in the world is sleep. It's more important than working. It's more important than eating, because that's the time when you pray and meditate and you're in that subconscious thought, you're in the universal mind, the spirits and angels, and that stuff comes into you overnight and you're sitting there praying going, what am I going to solve? What am I trying? You don't want to go to sleep because you're exhausted. You want to go to sleep for a purpose. Life has a purpose. Being born has a purpose. As I don't remember which person said it. Everybody has a purpose. Everybody. And helping them find their purpose for themselves is such a core of something we've lost. And it's always there. And that's why I love when I was looking, I mean, I've got so many different things that are going to, you know, we have talked about in one way or another. But when you change the name to Ethico, and I was reading the description of why, One of the questions I had for you is, the old school and the stigmas and over this. Do you think what the world just went through had two questions, or maybe the same? What the world went through, why do we have to go through something to be able to realize what the truth is? Why don't we just realize what the truth is beforehand? You know, you want to plan for retirement, but you don't plan for anything else. It's being ready when things happen. Don't grasp onto something. You know, when somebody dies, that's a good example. When somebody dies, you go, oh, I'm going to do this or do that. You know, maybe you go to temple or church or whatever you're going, and you pray. Then a week or so later, we could become automatic habit machines and start the whole process all over again, and we forget what we learned. We don't stay there. So why do we have to go through something like this to switch it over? And do you think it will carry over for a period of time? Because human beings don't do that. We don't learn from anything.
It won't
stay the same thing. So it will. You think this is going to stick?
No.
Okay.
That's why it keeps repeating.
It
all keeps repeating. The cycles keep repeating. So if we can learn from it and we can impart it to our children sooner and we can stop learning from experience and start learning from wisdom, then we can maybe carry that forward. But that's a chain that has to continue to, those links on that chain need to continue forward and forward. You know, you said something before. I want to circle back to it. I know you have another question, but, you said life is a placebo and every life is a purpose. And I've kind of thought that purpose is a placebo. And I felt at some level that sleep sometimes can feel like a simulation. Like you're stepping into the simulation. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Ooh, I like that. I'm using that. Can I trademark that?
Take it.
Okay. I like that. So it's a simulation of, yes, because that reality that you create while you're sleeping, no one's there except for you. And I've had more spiritual experiences while asleep, waking up. I've had more conversations for me in my Ajanoi with God or spirits or angels in the middle of the night when I wake up and I've got information going, I think I'll mark that down. I go right back to sleep. But it's positive. It's, a simulation. I like that a lot because it is. It's a digital, analog, whatever you want, a simulation of something in your imagination. And we're told at an early age to stop using the imagination. Don't use imagination. Listen to me. Listen to this. And I like that. I'm definitely going to use that.
But that stamping out of the imagination is like clipping the wings of a bird or taking the claws from a cat. That's what we have. That's how we interact with this world.
Ooh, I like that too. I'm going to have to use all these. Because you're taking away. So Albert Einstein said, imagination is just the preview of coming attractions.
Ooh.
Love that statement. He had a lot of cool stuff.
You can bring that into the world. But how about, let's talk about how purpose is a placebo.
Go.
Yeah.
Go.
I mean, if you think about it, Philip, that the purpose that you set up in your mind is only, it's simply a waking simulation. It's you telling yourself to manufacture some hope for your present state that if you do this, it will happen. Sometimes you approximate the real purpose and sometimes you're close to it. Sometimes it's just something that gets you through that season so that you can get to something else. You can't tell yourself what your purpose is because you're not going to know it until you discover it. So you're giving yourself what is your prescribed purpose to try to manufacture some hope, to try to drive you through something. And it's all this thing that maybe it's imagination and your subconscious mind giving it to you. But a lot of times it's something that you're forcing to try to push into your life the things that you think you want. And if you would just step back and put your thinker down and pick up your knower and let your knower know the things that you don't know that you know, then you could get to what is your actual purpose and not the placebo purpose.
That's interesting because, your inner knowing knows, no doubt. And when you force, it negates.
Good.
Huh?
Again, I get to work with this guy. I hear this all. It's like,
come on.
That was freaking nuts.
I mean, this is stuff we talk about all the time.
Your knower. I mean, that's right. That's exactly right.
What's weird is we all understand what we just said to each other.
Yeah, it's weird enough.
But yeah, your inner knowing knows. And when you force, it negates. So there's something called the Tao Te Ching. And the little I've read about it up till now is one of them. They talk about water a lot. It's about 3,000 years old. And they talk about how water drives everything, how everything is just flowing. And when you go with the flow of the water, that everything, you're not forcing. You're not energizing against trying to do something, forcing something that you're trying to figure out. Why can't I do this? Why can't? And the more you force, I hate the word stress. I'm still searching for a new word for stress. But because stress is not something that just falls out of the sky. It's something in our minds. It's just a word.
And it springs up from us. You want to talk about water? It springs out of our heart.
Ooh, wow. That's very good. I like that a lot. I like that a lot.
Don't call it stress. Just call it geyser.
Ooh.
Oh, I like that.
It's a better word.
Yeah, geyser. A geyser of conscious noise garbage. Just
but
a
get
geyser
this
of noise.
Get this, Philip. It's not just a geyser that, you know, like Old Faithful. It guises, it disguises what you really should be understanding.
That's right.
It's a geyser. It's a thing that geyses.
I like taking words and kind of taking a little twist on them and just having it that way, because people can relate to that. If you get too much into different philosophies, people are just going to zone out. But if you just kind of relate everything back to everything that you do, every choice, you know, my wife and I have had this discussion. If I didn't go through what I've gone through in my life, I wouldn't be here right now.
Right.
And if I didn't learn and go back, because you can't, you don't want to bring the past into the present, because now you're bringing the present in the from the past, you're not going forward. And then you have this perceived future that hasn't happened. So you make a mistake yesterday and you become alternating current of crazy thoughts. Mm-hmm. And your mind is just going crazy because the mind has to be two sets of minds. And the mind is, the conscious mind is alternating current. And in the electrical system of the mind, not the electrical system of the wall sockets, but the electrical system of the mind, the conscious mind is alternating current, alternating thought, constant movement of nothing. It doesn't serve any kind of purpose.
Back and forth.
Exactly. Gio, I understand you have to go. Nick, would you like to continue the conversation?
I would, yeah.
Please do, yeah. I can't wait to catch it when it airs on the podcast. Thanks for having me on, Philip.
But we should do this again, the three of us. There's something special here.
Yeah, I love that.
I agree. Absolutely. All right, go to your call because you're already late.
All right, thanks, guys.
Be well. So, Nick, it one of the things that's interesting among many is, you know, I make cards. I've got hundreds of these cards, just different things that I write, and they come from reading different books.
Read that card for the folks, will you?
Got a minute.
Sleeping is more important than awaking. Wow.
Correct. I've got tons of them, and this is for me. So I put out a card every day. And what represents the philosophy in my life is a sand timer, because I get to see the trickles of sand time that are going through my life all the time. And according to actuarial statistics, what my wife tells me, the men usually live to about 82, 83 on average, women 85, 86. That doesn't give us a lot of time.
Right.
And I don't want to waste time in the negative mind. I want to be in the positive mind. And you have to take time for silence. How much silence do you have? And do you give yourself? Do you have kids?
I do.
Okay, how old are the kids?
4, 7, and 10.
Okay, you don't have a lot of silence. Do you give yourself some silent time for yourself?
I don't think I have enough silent time.
But you do manage to have a little bit at least, right?
I have a little, but not nearly enough. Yeah.
Okay. So how do you process? So when you're having the going on, and you know somebody's talking, listening is a skill. I have something in the philosophy called voiced activation, and those of everybody, you probably know what an oscilloscope is, correct?
Yep.
So you know, I have the voice activation. You see that sine wave or square wave or triangle wave, whatever it is. So I picture that on the screen in my mind, motion picture screen in my mind when somebody's talking, and that way I can listen a lot better, and I can hear what they're saying. So what do you do when you don't have that silence? Do you have time for your your version of praying or your version of meditating, what do you do? What do you do?
I think if I don't have that silence, it ends up coming in like fake presence.
Ooh. That's good.
I'm present, but I'm not present.
Yes. So how do you relay that, or what do you do to be able to help that so you can actually get off that cycle?
I just think it has to come down to being, you know, conscious of it, conscious of those tendencies, you know? I mean, you're not going to stumble into presence is what I say. You have to create that presence.
I agree.
Yeah.
Okay. I got a few other things I'm going to go through because we're kind of like, tell me where you got Ethico from and why did you decide Ethico?
So I like the sound of my brother came up with the name, but the second I saw it, I knew immediately this was the name. This was the perfect name for our company. I think it sounds, the feelings that come along with the word, I think are good. They're open, you know, just the sound as the word ends is like an open sound. It tells you kind of what we do to some degree, but also leaves some mystery to it. And it's way easier to type on the phone.
Yeah, this is very true. Why did you decide to change it at this time? I know what's written on the paper and stuff, but I wanted to hear it from you.
Yeah, I think our name before was very limiting. I think the feeling that came along with that old name was one that we didn't like from the start. I think it was just, you know, very limiting, constricting name. It kind of spoke to, kind of implicitly, I don't think by design by any means, it spoke to sort of all the negative things that go along with the branding problem that compliance has. And one of, you know, these are the lines that, I don't know, it just feels like a constricting word.
Right.
So compliance line feels like kind of constricting, where I feel like the ethics of a company, the compliance function of an organization is one that draws the lines around the canvas that allows all the art to bloom forward. It's the lines around the field that allows all the magic of sport to be had. It's the lines on the road that allow the business to drive a lot faster. Those are all freeing things. You know, knowing where the lines of the road are, that's a really freeing thing, right? When you're driving a car.
Yeah.
Understanding where the lines of a company are and what's inbounds and what's out of bounds, not to get you in trouble, but rather to let you run more quickly. That's a very freeing thing. And so, you know, we wanted to kind of move away from that like bad branding problem that a lot of these departments that we serve have within their organizations and try to step toward the new, a new era where, you know, ethics can really be at the center of business, and that ethical culture, when it's authentic, can just drive so much magic in the workplace and in individuals in the broader world.
It's hard to change. Like I said earlier, it's very difficult for people to change. Excuse me. People don't like change because when change is uncomfortable and they're not familiar with it. And when it appears, so when you're working with other organizations and they know they need to make a change, but they don't know how to do it, you come up with, you can have, even though the person in charge might say that's fine, but people below are resisting it. How do you do that? How do you deal with that?
You know, you said something early in the conversation that people hate change, and yet all we ever do is change. I mean, after 7 years, every cell in your body has changed, and yet we're the same person. So
true.
It's this weird paradox in life where change is the only thing that's constant, yet constant change creates this stress for us, and it's something that we resist. So I don't really have that great of an answer other than trying to make people feel comfortable with the change and recognize that the change many times has an outcome that's better than where they're at, right? There's this thing called the status quo bias. And status quo bias is exactly what it sounds. We have a bias for the status quo. We have a bias to, you know, bodies at rest will stay at rest, and bodies in motion tend to stay at motion. That at rest state or that in motion state, those are status quos that are going to perpetuate unless some external force is exerted on that system, right? So, or exerted on that body in that system. So we're always trying to overcome that as we're trying to drive any kind of change, whether that's personal change, whether that's, you know, societal change, organizational change, change in your family. There's always that like habit that's established that prevents us from, you know, that's going to cause us to kind of stay on that track that we're on.
One of the things I've learned and I have to remember is I can't change you.
Right.
I have to, you know, we're looking out, everybody wants to go to outside world to change something. If you go back 50 or 100 years, let's say 2000, man's into humanity to man hasn't changed at all.
Right.
And you have to change from the inside out. And when you try to force somebody to change, there's more walls that pop
100%.
Up. And being able to break that down has to be something that is open. People have to be, it's something that I've learned for myself, because I'm older than you. It's never, you're never too young or never too old to learn and change and do something different. My 99-year-old grandmother that died 20 years ago told me that. She was 6 feet under the ground. That's the last time you stop learning. Mm-hmm. And she was learning forever. I mean, she gave us quotes and things, and she was very meditative and believed in God, and she was spiritual, and just had great conversation. And she would always tell me, and my grandma's the only one that could call me this, Philly, keep learning and never stop learning. And my parents were like that. I had great role models in my life, including my sister and many other people, my wife now, and other things that have happened. But you have to learn to move forward and understand, because we have these folders in our conscious mind that at a certain age, you're going to get sick. You're going to lose your eyesight. You're not going to be able to move. You can't do this. You can't do that. You can't do this. You can't do that. And that's all we do is talk about, you end up people sitting at a breakfast table that are older, and they're just, all they do is talk and complain about the stuff that doesn't work.
Right.
And the more you talk about it, the more it becomes real. The more it becomes real, the more it becomes fact. And if you convince yourself that you're going to lose your memory because I'm 75, I'm 80, I'm going to start losing my memory.
Yep.
Well, guess what? After a while, you're going to lose your memory.
Got it.
Now, I'm not saying that physical things and mental things and things don't happen with age. I understand the body degrades, but don't help it along. You know, when people tell me, well, I can't stop doing this. Well, you did this because you thought that, or you were thinking that. So you're going to go by the thoughts you're thinking, which is the conscious noise, or the thinking mind. Not go by what your thinking thoughts are. Stop and get some silence, however that works for you. You're busy. We're all busy. Everybody always has an excuse. But sit down. If you need to do it right before you go to bed and the lights are out, if you say, I've got to go downstairs, everybody's asleep. Or you get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, have a cup of coffee and just stare at the wall.
Right.
Give yourself some time to listen to yourself. I think your brother was talking about that with, you know, don't listen to what else, all the noise is. Don't listen to what's going on the outside. Don't believe what people are trying to tell you what to do. What I'm here, this version of me that you see, I didn't even know existed 5 years ago.
Right.
I didn't know this philosophy was done. I didn't know I'd be writing a musical for the philosophy. I did all these different things that I'm doing that surrounding Ajahnoy, your soul purpose. I didn't even know where it came from. But once I opened my mind to that, it's transformed my life, because this is all I'm doing the rest of my life. I want to teach people this. I want to share this with people. I want to make differences in people's lives and businesses and personal life, whatever you want, because you know the best way for you. You know your true purpose in life. You're the only one knows. We talked right. about the inner knowing knows. You know exactly what, but you fight against it. And you don't want to be, there's one of these things, I was reading this book, but this woman, she wrote, her name is Elizabeth Towne, T-O-W-N-E. And she was talking about how on your deathbed, if you could just see the angels and spirits around you, and they're all angry at you, and they're yelling at you going, you know what? You didn't do what I asked you to do. I was here to help you, show you your purpose. And now I've got nowhere to go. And then the only person that could do what you were doing, to write that book, to open that mall, to be a doctor, to be in the business you're in, to be in HR, whatever it is, you're the only person that could do that. I can't pass it on to anybody. So my spirit, Nate, we didn't do anything. You just resisted that.
Right.
And then the spirit and those angels and you died. Those things were only meant for you to do. And I don't want to be that way. I want to be active in the mind to the day I die, whatever that time is meant to be for me. And I want to be in joy and abundance every single waking moment. And that's why I have that sand timer, because it reminds me every day that sand keeps going. the now and the future, the now and the future, the alternating current of thought or the direct current of thought. All right, so I want to move on to one more question here. How, they're talking about well-being now. It's a big hot topic with everybody. I know my wife and her corporate, she's been in her job for 35 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm an engineer. I'm not like a numbers engineer. I'm more of a support guy type person. I'm out in the world. I see her spreadsheets and it just scares the daylights out of me. But they talk about well-being all the time. Well-being should have always been there. How do you define well-being in the well-being it should be? How do you define that now?
I think well-being is being well.
Well, that just summed up everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that.
And I think you can't do good unless you feel well. And if you're not feeling well, spiritually, mentally, physically, the good that you can do is always going to be compromised. It's always going to be hindered.
Well, I like that. Being well. I because playing with words and just redefining them in a more of a philosophical, worldly term can make all the difference in the world. I just, one of the things I do in the morning, I won't get out of bed until I have a, I'm grateful. I'm not grateful, I don't leave. So I'm there sometimes for a week, but I just, if I can't figure anything out, the most I say is, thank you. Thank you for my eyes opening. Thank you for the light that I have over my head. Thank you for the blankets that I have, the pillow that I have, the floor that I have, the water that I can go on. You can never run out of anything. And I have a gratitude journal that I do every single morning. And it could be one word, it could be five words. And what the whole idea is to put you in that positive frame of mind. Because there's always something that there's several things I do for the outside world to keep it out. People tell me they listen to this, they listen to that, they hear this, then don't do it. You know, it's an old joke with the doctor. You go to see the doctor, you say, my back hurts when I do this. And the doctor says, well, then just don't do that. So if there's something that doesn't work, things will not change. The world will keep going on way after all of us are all dead and gone. Somebody be sitting here talking about the same stuff. So make your life into a way that is exceptional, something that you can be proud of, something that you can be passing on to, either whether it's your kids, your wife, your family, your friends, whatever it is in your life. And just make that huge difference. So I want to come to the end of this conversation, but I'd love to keep talking about it at another level. But for now, give me a positive message or an aphorism to pass on to the conscious community audience, something that you could pass on right now that comes to mind.
It can always be worse, and you can always find something to be thankful for.
One more time, please.
It can always be worse, so you can always find something to be thankful for.
Yes. There's always, there's negative things happen in life. And I know it sounds a little weird, but I always take that negative thing and say, what can I learn from this? What can I get out of this? Because you have that choice.
I'll tell you this. I was reading about a study.
Okay.
And the study showed, so they basically had two groups of people. And they had a control group who would sell, you know, they were trying to sell something, and they would sell just over, going over the top, talking about all the positives about the thing that they were selling, okay? How great it was, how phenomenal it was, and so forth. On the other side, in the experimental group, they were told to talk about what they, you know, what was great about their product, but also mention something negative about the product. And there was like a 3 or 4x difference in the experimental group versus the control group. Because having some negativity in the mix allows us to engage both sides of our brain and kind of appreciate the positives relative to the negatives, right? So in the context of a sale and that sort of persuasion path, having that mix, you know, I guess you can kind of boil it down to you come across as more credible or whatever, but I think it actually goes to a much deeper level than that, because without those negatives, you don't appreciate the positives. And without those cold days, you don't appreciate the warmth of your bed. And without the, you know, I mean, without that sort of contrast, you don't appreciate those other things. And so to your point, there's like value in those hard times, because those hard times build you, and those hard times let you get better or learn a lesson, and also make those good times sweeter, you know?
Agreed. And one of my students actually was saying, when you were talking about that, that he was saying, this is hard. I said, it's simple what I'm telling him, getting down the meat and potatoes of the philosophy. He was like, well, I get that, but this is a lot of work. I said, well, how much do you want change? Right. Do you want to stay the same way? How much do you want to transform it? Or do you want to keep changing it? Again, the philosophy is not about changing habits, which give you a new routine. It's about changing the right mind.
Right.
And he was like, I didn't think about that. And it's very easy to go back. Like I said, uncomfortable, being comfortable in something you're familiar with, as opposed to being uncomfortable in something you've never done before. And when you kind of cross that line, you suddenly become, wow, I didn't know I could do that.
Right.
And maybe if I do it again, but it's going to be just as scary. And the more you open up different things, I mean, what I'm doing right now, and I'm not the only one, but for me, I'm trying something new. All this stuff is new, and it can be scary,
sure.
But I like a little something. I don't want to be comfortable to the point going, well, I guess I'll do the same thing the next day, you know, and get bored with it. I want something that's going to challenge me. And that's why I write all these cards. Here's another one. The engine of our body is our mind.
Wow. If that's true, if the engine of our body is our mind, then how much more important is what your grandmother said of keeping that mind flexible by continually learning?
Yep.
It's that's a mind people muscle. that are lifelong learners tend to live longer.
Yes. Yeah. Have you, so some of the names here, I wrote it down. I'm sure you've heard of Dale Carnegie.
Oh, sure.
Napoleon Hill, Earl Nightingale, W. Clement Stone. Actually, the ironic, because there's so many different ironic things that happen. A coincidence is my wife and I were watching something and it mentioned W. Clement Stone. She said, stop it. I go, why? Because she works for a company that he actually helped start that she
oh,
works
really?
For. Yeah. It's just, there are just so many different things that you're a magnet.
Yep.
And you
we
attract
all are.
What you think about.
That's right.
And the more you magnetize yourself, the more it becomes more powerful, and you start realizing that those coincidences, don't blow off the coincidences. Don't blow them, question them, ask why that happened. I mean, if something, and you know, another one I've also learned in life is if you ask too many questions, whether that I should do it or not, don't do it. It's not good to have. Here's another one. Actors pretend into a reality, and we have pretended into our reality.
Ooh, I like that.
And one more, entertainment is a brief mind vacation.
I love that mind vacation thing. I'd love to come back on with Gio and dive into some more of these philosophies because they're very interesting.
Well, we could keep talking on forever. I want to thank you for taking the time. Please thank your brother again. And I will leave our conscious community with the same thing I say all the time. Remember, it is more important to express your thinking thoughts and not the thoughts you are thinking. That is what is called conscious communication. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Conscious Communication. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and recommend on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcast. You can also get more great information at ConsciousCommunicationPodcast.com.